Here's where the action is.
Here are Australia's favourite wrestlers.
Here's where the action is.
On Wrestle Radio Australia.
Here's where the action is.
Whether you're a fan or part of the industry, Wrestle Radio Australia is here for you with four packed shows. Drawing Heat with Beej and the Dude. Axe Cast with Josh the Axe Shooter. Healing Out with Muhammad Ali Vaez. And WRA with Todd Eastman and Josh Armour.
Elliot Sexton has dropped by. What size foot are you?
I think it's 15 US. So right. It's not like amazingly huge or anything, but no. It gets the job done, Josh. And that's what matters.
That's what matters. That's it. That's what matters.
You know, because of the sex. Oh, yeah.
It's all free. Subscribe on iTunes, TuneIn Radio, or hear us at WrestleRadioAustralia.com. Wrestle Radio Australia. It's where the action is.
Welcome to Season 3, Episode 3 of Healing Out. Together, ladies and gentlemen, we are making wrestling in Australia great again. What does that even mean? How do you measure wrestling being great again? Is it possible to measure that? I don't know. Don't ask me for specifics. I literally saw somebody just elected President of the United States by saying the same thing and by giving nothing in the way of facts and, in fact, consistently lying. So why not do it here in the business of professional wrestling? So we are going to be making wrestling great again. Now, we won't be doing it anytime soon. By the time this recording is released, the final show on my booking calendar for the year, Warzone Wrestling, on December 3rd, will more than likely be over, and by then I will still more than likely be Warzone Heavyweight Champion. Oh, yes. I have been so lazy about recording these intros that there has been a lot that has transpired. Since the last time I did an intro, which I believe was in Season 2, I have become the Warzone Wrestling Heavyweight Champion. I bought Outback Championship Wrestling. I broke my losing streak at Outback Championship Wrestling, becoming 1-22, and the final heavyweight champion of Outback Championship Wrestling before I shut the company down of my own volition. Let's see, what else? Donald Trump was elected President of the United States, as we spoke about earlier. That's kind of a big deal. Maybe not so much here, but back home, let me tell you, it's been quite a doozy, if I do say so myself. Now, with that said, I do have to make a correction. I believe on December 9th, there allegedly may be a Battle Championship Wrestling show. I don't know. It was listed as OCW in my calendar, but I'm about as lazy in updating my calendar as I am in recording intros for these shows. I'm sorry, Josh. So with that said, I think that might be a show. If it's not, no big deal. If it is, I'm sure you'll see it advertised on Facebook. Maybe. Moving on. I can confirm that on January 20th, Battle Championship Wrestling will return for its first show in 2017 and its second show ever. The guest there will be Bobby Lashley. That's kind of a big deal for Battle Championship Wrestling. On January 28th, I'll be making my debut at NHPW in Perth, Western Australia. So I'm definitely looking forward to that. And of course, on Saturday, February 4th, we'll be making Wrestling Great Again together at Platinum Wrestling Enterprises. So enough of that nonsense. Before we dive into the conversation I had with one Tommy Hellfire, who is a very interesting cat, if I do say so myself, I would like to point out that if you need merchandise for any reason whatsoever, give the people at Wrestle Merch Printing a shout. Tom is top-notch, even though I rib him constantly on this podcast, and I've never even met the guy. But, you know, I'm giving the guy plugs on a podcast, and I don't even get merch, so it's not like I can hit him up for a deal or for a discount or work him in any way like that, so I might as well just rib him. But he's really good. If you need wrestling-related merchandise, perhaps you own a company, or maybe even two companies, like Tommy Hellfire, today's guest, or maybe you're a professional wrestler yourself. Maybe you're a fan of professional wrestling. Maybe you're a wrestler who wants to get a t-shirt for your bar mitzvah business. Maybe you want to get themed condoms for your rats. Whatever you need, Tom at Wrestle Merch Printing can handle it. Hit him up on his Facebook page. He'll give you prompt and courteous service. That I guarantee. Except I've never actually talked to him or written Wrestle Merch Printing. So take that for what you will. It is great, though. He's making merch great again. Season 3 has been the season of shooting. Shooting in the wrestling sense, not in the American Second Amendment sense. Tommy didn't really shoot, though. We didn't really go that. Well, actually, no, let me back up. We do get into a little bit of religion, a little bit of politics. These are things that I am passionate about outside of the business of professional wrestling. So I will always talk to people who have likewise similar interests. Tommy's a very smart, well-spoken guy, so the conversation itself was a breeze. We did record this in a car, so I was somewhat concerned that perhaps the noise from the engine would interfere with the conversation, but upon listening to it back, that is not a concern at all. Remarkably clear in my producer USB microphone, if I do say so myself. With that said, you can follow me on Twitter, Ali_VAEZ. There's another Ali Vaez, and he is actually a national security advisor for the United States government. And he may work for a think tank, but nonetheless, he does not have his shirt off in his profile photo, so it's not difficult to discern who is who. You can also find me on Facebook using my real name, because I'm that stupid, Muhammad Ali Vaez. And you can find me on Instagram at, I think, Ali Vaez. When it comes to Instagram, it is by far the weakest of my social media games. I am no JXT. However, I do check it from time to time, so if that's your preferred medium of conversation, you can hit me up. There is no guarantee I will respond because, quite frankly, life is busy these days with a lot of exciting things that obviously I'm not going to go into. I just like to foreshadow in a weird and creepy way by saying life is busy and there's a lot of exciting things. They'll be revealed at an appropriate time. So with that said, thank you for listening to this conversation. Thank you to the folks that have subscribed to the entire family of podcasts at Wrestle Radio Australia. They very much appreciate it, as do I. And I particularly like the conversations that I have with individuals when I'm surprised to hear that they are regular listeners. So with that said, we'll continue to do that in the weeks to come. Also, I will give a plug as to who will be appearing on future episodes of Healing Out. I've had quite a few conversations in the last few weeks, you know, trying to actually book people in advance, like a responsible content creator would do. You can look forward to conversations with Adam Brooks in the next few weeks. Also, the famous Bass from Outback Championship Wrestling's former Glory Days, and of course now Battle Championship Wrestling. I'll also be having a conversation with Mike Altamira, who is a man who fascinates me to no end. Not that I'm obsessed with him or anything, but he is in the boxing world, and in my conversations with him months back, I was struck at the similarities between the two worlds, even though one is perceived as a quote-unquote shoot, and one is perceived as a quote-unquote work. But the businesses themselves are remarkably similar from what talent is pushed to the presentation to the dirty, seedy nonsense and dishonesty that's inherent in both businesses. So I am very much looking forward to those conversations. With that said, enjoy the car ride with Tommy Helfire. Fuck Josh Armer anyway.
Yeah, fuck this
guy. Were you on the M1?
We are on the M1. We're heading back from Gippsland to Raugen.
Little side note, I'm in the car of one Tommy Helfire. Tonight we had a tag team match against one Slade Mercer and another individual. I forgot his name. What was his name?
The ring announcer, Luke Woodhouse.
Luke Woodhouse. We were not successful.
Nope.
Nonetheless, Tommy, thanks for agreeing to do season 3, episode 3. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no, that's cool, man. That's cool. I don't mind appearing and taking pins for you. It's all good.
Phenomenal. So, you're an interesting cat.
Thank you.
Now, here's why I say this. Number one, you've been involved in the business of professional wrestling for 10 years now, right?
That is correct, yeah. Started training in 2006, so just over 10 years ago.
So right away, we have something in common, professional wrestling. You are also an owner of a company here in Melbourne.
That I am, yeah. Are you putting it over or am I putting it over?
Put it over, it's your baby.
Okay. I am part owner of Melbourne City Wrestling, believe it or not, and I am also one of the owners / promoters of Lucha Fantastica. Which operates in Melbourne as well.
And if that was not enough to make you an interesting addition to season 3 here on Healing Out, you've also parlayed into the acting world, correct?
Yes, I have. I'm currently working on my third feature film, and one of the lead roles this time. So I've had like main roles, but this is like a lead role this time, so very exciting.
Is acting kind of like wrestling, where you got to come in and do some job matches and a couple dark matches, get over with everybody, and then they'll push you?
Oh, yeah. Like my first movie, I got squashed, and I was the first guy to get killed. So I was squashed and dropped out in my first movie. Second movie, I made it to the end of the Rumble, didn't win. This movie, I'm going over in the Rumble, mate. I'm going all the way, coast to coast.
Fuck yeah, dude. That's what I'm talking about. A man of many talents. So, where do you want to dive in? Tonight, we tag-teamed for the first time. What were your thoughts?
Man, it was great. Call it in the ring. I had a great time. Great time. Because I've been in the ring a few times with Slade. Tonight was the first time you and me have actually worked together. And we had a commentator who didn't know what he was doing, but it was just everything just kind of working a gimmick. You know, it can either go one way or the other. And fortunately, it went the good way because, man, we just fucking called it in the ring and had a good time.
I agree. It was a lot of fun. Is that your flavor of ice cream? Do you like to call it in the ring?
Oh, yeah. Oh, definitely. I find if you go out there and you've got every spot worked out, there's no room, there's no wiggle room. You don't particularly know which way the crowd's going to go or whatever. Like tonight when I went out there, I was doing a mic spot and I kind of had a direction, but like the direction got changed when the crowd was popping for certain things. So I just changed my mic spot, you know, and the end of it, they were chanting, they were screaming, they were going nuts. And then same thing, went out there, introduced you with another mic spot. Same thing, just picked up where the crowd was going and went with it.
Organically flowed with what you were given based on the feedback by the people who bought tickets, because at the end of the day, we are trying to sell tickets.
In a nutshell, yeah.
So I would say that it's not a stretch that we are both fans of the same flavor of ice cream. So it's nice to be in a tag team situation, albeit losing. I'm sure we'd win the next one.
It made sense. It made sense. We Cinderella's story, the bully keeps putting down the tiny little guy who's got no business being in a ring. The tiny little guy scores the pinfall on the bully. We can come back and we can work with this.
And the tiny little guy sold a bunch of tickets.
Oh, fuck yeah. Jesus. that's all that matters, isn't it?
Let's talk about Lucha Fantastica.
Let's do it.
Did I say that right?
Yes.
Okay.
Luchador wrestling, you don't see much of that in Australia. Is that because of a lack of exposure? Is that because in the glory days of Australian wrestling, it was not, it was more of a, like a, more of a throwback to like an American circuit, like the 1950s NWA, where it was treated like a shoot and guys brawled and beat the shit out of each other and stuff. It was believable. It was a mainstay of entertainment. Was Lucha ever presented to a mainstream Australian audience in the last 50 years?
No. No, it's not. And I want to make that that point. Like, you can't... See, Mexican wrestling is such a, like, a sort of a niche thing. So what we've done is, like, we haven't, like, tried to recreate Lucha Libre, so to speak. We've gone pop culture. People love the glitz and the glam, and they love the actual, the icon look of the guy in the mask more than the actual, you know, like, say, the Lucha wrestling, so to speak. So, you know, we have guys on there who can, you know, Lucha wrestle, but, like, towards our crowd, which is primarily, like, it's a scene crowd, like a scenester. So you got people, uni students in their 20s through to young professionals and that, who just want to go there kind of expecting, like, a campy sort of cabaret-style show. And that's exactly what we give them. So everybody has a gimmick. Everybody has a character. I've got myself. I do a sort of a Dr. Frankenstein. Oh, Frankenfurt, sorry. Big difference. Yeah. I do a Dr. Frankenfurt gimmick, like where I borrowed from the Rocky Horror Picture Show. I've got a little Paige Gray who comes out with me as my little servant. If you've seen her, she's tiny. And basically, that's where I get most of my heat, man. It's not so much through the wrestling, it's through the crowd that comes. Yeah, primarily people, early 20s, want to drink, want to have a good time. So you just give them the characters, you give them what they want. And fuck, man, like, we do shows at Sydney, Queensland, we're going back. There's more talks with other venues around Australia. So it just keeps rolling. And it's because, you know, like, we have the ability to not take ourselves so seriously. And be able to, like, you know, be able to make fun of ourselves, but at the same time still put on really good shows. So we have the wrestling element to it. You got some great wrestlers on the show. Emmanuel, you know, Sid Parker, Carlo Cannon, just to name a few, like, absolutely amazing wrestlers. But at the same time, like, they also know how to work a gimmick. And what we're talking about tonight, you know, like, fuck, just call it in the ring. Basically, everybody knows what the crowd wants. Everybody knows how to get that. And, man, it's its own show. And it's my baby. I couldn't be more prouder of that show.
Awesome. How many events did you guys run last year? And last year, I mean, like, 2016.
Oh, shit. Christ. We did 4 in Melbourne, 2 in Sydney, 1 in Queensland. So, yeah, we ran a few.
7 events. Do you have plans to continue that or expand on that next year, 2017?
Yeah, absolutely. Because we always, like, try to plan it around, like, you know, events. So next year we're going back for... what's the first one? Not Australia Day, because that doesn't matter.
You're asking me? I'm a fucking... Yeah.
No, well, you'd know this. Come on, shit. Hallmark. Valentine's Day.
Oh, okay, yeah.
You're married. You still remember Valentine's Day. That. Yes, it's the one we get one over day.
But I still get heat on it every year, believe me.
No, I rock the flower gimmicks, mate. I know how to work. Don't worry about that.
Fair enough. So... I guess starting then, and then you guys are going to stick with the same schedule. You're going to try to expand. What's the next step for Lucha? Are you going to keep going where you got and keep building on your base? What's the next step in an endeavor like that? That's, from my perspective, a unique approach that no other person who's in a position similar to yours in the position of professional wrestling is doing. Does that make sense, or was that question way too wordy?
No. Be brave. Everybody else is doing, you know, like, super serious wrestling, and it's good. You know, like, you see Melbourne City Wrestling, super serious wrestling, everybody's, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And the wrestling crowd loves it. The problem is, like, the point of difference is we present Lucha Fantastica to a total different audience. Like, I can walk through a wrestling show and recognize everybody in the crowd because, you know, they're regulars. They come back. I go to a Lucha Fantastica show. I don't know fucking anybody in the crowd. And that's a good thing.
It's a very good thing. Yeah, I agree with you. It's more like, let's create a spectacle where people who may or may not have a casual interest in wrestling, may not even care about it, but they'll definitely indulge and get into a live action improv that's going on in front of them with easily identifiable and digestible characters doing sometimes amazing athletic feats, or more importantly, telling a story.
Yeah, or humping somebody's face, yeah.
Or humping somebody's face in the context of a good story.
Yes, story, yeah, definitely.
Awesome. So, with the Lucha Fantastica endeavors and the Melbourne City wrestling endeavors, and nights like tonight where you put on the worker boots and you go out there and you carry me in a tag match, where else? That, I mean, that's a lot of time within those three projects. You're also in acting. How do you juggle these different interests and these different babies? Because you're in that unique spot where it's not just an interest or a hobby. Like, there's money involved in this. This is a business. So how do you prioritize your time, and how do you focus on all these different things, I guess?
Sacrifice. Sacrifice your time. If you want to do something, if you want to make something happen, you just got to sacrifice your time. Basically, you don't. Oh, it's not even so much sacrificing your time. It's like, you know, like we've got a Lucha show coming up. I want to make this the best show possible.
So, invest your time.
Yeah, so you invest your time in making it the best show possible. I've got a movie coming up. I want to do the best I can. So you get coaching and all that. So there goes another night during the week. You know, I have to wrestle, so I have to look after my body. So there goes another. You just got to constantly invest your time, but at the same time, it's tough because, like, you know, you do burn out. You do burn out. You know, like, you'll get home, you want to lie down with your partner or something like that without falling asleep. you want to talk, you want to have that connection, and sometimes it gets lost there. I'm also a father as well. I have this gorgeous little 4-year-old. Have I shown you a photo?
Yes. What's her name?
Gabriella. She's gorgeous. And so, you know, that's another thing. You know, I just think the absolute world of my daughter, and every little moment I get to be with her is just it's amazing. So it's hard to juggle. It really is. Sometimes you just need to say no. But other times, you know, like, your phone's just constantly going off. It's blowing up all the time. You wake up in the morning, you'll have 20 messages you need to read or whatever. And, you know, and as you said, you know, it's either coming from MCW, it's coming from Lucha Fantastica, it's coming from a movie schedule, or it's coming from other projects that you're working on. Like, we just did the Titty Twister shows for the Iron Spider film, which won, I'll drop it in there, won an award for Best Director. Yeah, won an award for Best Director at Fantastic Film Fest, which is one of the most prestigious film festivals in the world. So, we just did a launch for that, and that took a shitload more time than what it should have to set it up. But, you know, if you want to do these things, you just, you know, if you want to be relevant, if you want to be, you know, if you want to get your name out there, if you want your brand to be the best it can, you just got to sacrifice that, you know. So I've got the MCW brand, I've got the Lucha Fantastica brand, and I've got Tommy Hellfire, the wrestler, and the acting brand. So, you know, I've also, you know, networked like a frigging madman.
So when you appear on these feature films or these acting gigs, are you credited as Tommy Hellfire? Have you taken it to that level in terms of branding that specific character? Or do you go by your real name?
No, I go by Tommy Hellfire.
That's awesome.
I find that Tommy Hellfire is a lot more exciting than my actual shoot name, so it stands out. Everybody goes, "Ooh, Tommy Hellfire." Whether you go, "Oh, that's Dickie," or "That's cool," you just remember it.
Yeah.
Like, how the hell do you forget that?
Plus, you're not dumb like me, where I actually use my real name. So every idiot. You know, man, I never wanted to. When I first started, we went by this Akbar last name, right?
Yep.
It's a Middle Eastern generic name.
Yep.
I was Ali, obviously, because that's my middle name. And my partner was Omar. His real name's Khalil. He is Omar. Ali and Omar. It had a ring to it. And when, after WWE fucked off from OVW and there was like this vacant period, Jim Cornette came in and started running things.
Yep.
Louisville, Kentucky is the hometown of the real Muhammad Ali. When I say the real, I mean like the actual famous one.
Actually, yeah.
So when he found out that like my real name is Muhammad Ali, I didn't have a choice. He made me do it because he was making me do the little rich, spoiled fucking trust fund gimmick at the time. So it fits in perfectly that a little pussy would call himself the name of the greatest fighter in the world who's from the same town.
Just do it.
So yeah, so in that regard, I got worked into doing it against my better judgment. And then 10 years later, I'm still using it.
Yeah.
It is what it is. It's me. Fuck off. It's me.
It stands out. I don't see why it would be a problem. If it stands out, people are going to talk about it. Go with it.
Well, the problem is that like when you go work some show in bumfuck somewhere and you get a bunch of heat, and then you're dumb enough to use your real name, they can find you on Facebook. They can write your mother. They can, you know, harass your sister.
Yeah,
that's the downside, you know. And I'm too lazy to make a fan page because I get heat. I don't need fans.
I've got a shoot account and a worked account, and I do not mix both.
Very smart. Very smart. So as the owner and proprietor of two wrestling companies, I'm sure at some point or another, you've had to deal with merchandising companies to create other income streams for your companies, for your brands. Who do you normally go to for any kind of your merchandise needs? You know, just not for any specific reason that I'm asking. I'm just, you know, kind of curious about it.
Oh, okay. Generally the guy down at the local market, you know, because I haven't heard about any local guys doing t-shirts or anything like that. Is there local people doing t-shirts?
Well, I don't know. I can't vouch for anybody in the Melbourne area, but I've heard great things about this company called WrestleMerch Printing.
WrestleMerch Printing?
Yes, they're allegedly out of Adelaide.
Oh, jeez.
Yes, they allegedly are very courteous, very responsive when you inquire on their Facebook page about any kind of specialized or custom merchandise printing needs. Super friendly service, very fast, or very creative in coming up with gimmicks. Mr. Juicy has told me in confidence, which I'll now stooge off on this podcast, that Tom over at WrestleMerch Printing has created concepts that he has used and sold out of very immediately. So they provide an excellent service at a fair price with great customer service. They're out of Adelaide. You know, maybe you should consider giving WrestleMerch Printing a look at the next time you're looking to print up some t-shirts.
I haven't been booked yet. Does Tom contact you, or do you like?
Well, the way I would look at it is he's got so much work and a workload at the moment because of his excellent customer service, prices, and skill that there is a line to use him.
You know,
but if you get in now, you could get some merch printed up by 2017, I think. I'm sure, you know, I mean, you're kind of a big deal. So maybe he'll jump you in line or something to that effect. You ever thought about that?
Does he know I'm a big deal?
Believe me, you're on season 3, episode 3. He knows you're a big deal now.
33.
Not that this has anything to do with it, but he does sponsor this podcast. So, you know, think about, you know, for your next merchandise needs, contacting Tom over at WrestleMerch Printing.
Love it. Love it. All right, done. Sold.
Actually, they fucking suck, dude. Don't even call them.
Oh.
Anyway, so we've talked about merchandise. We've talked about yourself as a proprietor of two separate, distinct wrestling brands. You parlayed into the acting world. Now, is this something that you always wanted to do? Did you act before you wrestled? Did you wrestle, then act? Give me the origin story.
The origin story was I did not act before wrestling. I did something in high school, you know, like just did a class because there was a pretty girl in the class and I wanted to meet her, and it was just a good in.
That's
it,
yeah.
So, you know, well, yeah, so the worker worked, got in, got over.
Fair enough.
But so that was me doing drama in high school. And then after that, like I was in music I was always like a music student, always playing in bands, always doing all that stuff.
Always creative in some way or another.
Yeah, always creative in some way. So when that fell through, that's when I got into wrestling. You know, like, so everybody just kind of fell off and, like, you know, substance abuse and all that sort of shit. And I was just like, you know, that's not for me. So that's where I got into wrestling, because I fell in love with the show side of it, right? And then, like, you know, Daniel Armstrong from Strongman Productions was, he made a wrestling movie with PCW. And I wasn't with PCW, so I didn't meet Daniel Armstrong anyway. Like, I was working at NAW at the time. He came over to NAW to help film and all that sort of stuff. And he saw something in me, like, you know, like, we were doing all the backstage promos, and I was just, like, always hitting all my marks with the promos and the characterization and all that sort of stuff, because, you know, that's sort of, you know, my specialty. Yeah, it's my thing. That's what gets me over. So anyway, like, we got to talking, you know, like, we hit it off pretty good. And then he had a movie coming up. Oh, then he had a short film where they said they needed some dude, like, to do it. And I was like, oh, yeah, I'm some dude. So I went in, did a short film for him, and that was cool. And I was like, yeah, got a little bit of a taste for it.
When you say short film, are we talking like 15 minutes, 30 minutes?
I think it was about 10.
Okay.
It was 10. It was I didn't have any lines, right? So, like, the girl, the main character in the movie, had just broken up with the, had legit just broken up with the boyfriend, right? She was going over to get stuff out of the house, and he's, like, you know, like, chasing after her, trying to talk to her. She runs out the door, runs into my arms. He sees me. My only bit of direction for that scene, for my very first scene, was, I want you to look at this guy, look at him up and down, acknowledge that, yeah, dude, I'm fucking your girlfriend, but we could still get a beer sometime. You know what I mean? That was my first bit of direction. So that was that came pretty natural to me, that one. So we did that, and kind of got a taste for it, and it was cool. Anyway, fast forward like a year or so, and he started making a movie called Murderdrome, and I was, like, almost, like, offended. Like, why didn't you call me? Why didn't you book me for this? And he goes, oh, you need to audition. I was like, oh, shit. Never auditioned for anything in my life. So I went in, did a really good audition. And they're like, oh, yeah, sweet. So they brought me back.
What did they do? They have you read lines, or how was your audition?
So they gave me a scene. And I had to go in there with another actress. And they gave her the same scene. So we did the scene together, basically. And I did really well. She didn't get the part, but I did really well. Then they brought me back in to do the scene again, and I made an absolute fucking dog's breakfast of it. But because I did well in the first thing and I was friends with Dan, he kind of talked everybody into just giving me the role anyway.
Yeah.
So they did, and that was my first feature film. That was my first, like, you know, speaking role in anything. And the movie kind of became a bit of a cult hit. Like, we got screenings all around Australia. We got put in JB Hi-Fi. We got screenings all around the world, man. I went to IMBD and I looked up the movie, and we had I was reading reviews from New York to bloody Glasgow and every
that's awesome.
Every country in between, man. So, like, this little movie, and, like, even the last movie I auditioned for, I walked in and they've all gone, oh, you're the Murderdrome guy. Sup, bro? Sup? That was my gimmick the whole movie. I was the dude who just kept saying, yeah, you want to know how to pick up chicks? Just say sup, sup, sup. So I just kept doing that. So everywhere I go now in the film industry, I'm always forever known as the sup guy.
Perfect.
Yeah.
It's a gimmick.
It's a gimmick. So, you know, I work it into every movie thing now.
So, like, the acting world, who you know got and opened a door for you and also helped kind of pull you through.
Yep.
Learning your flavor of ice cream in the ring is working on the fly. So being put in these situations with actors and actresses where a little bit of improvisation may be needed, yep, at certain times, you're overprepared for. So would it be a fair statement that the 10 years you spent in pro wrestling has paid off as kind of like a foundation for what you're doing now in your acting endeavors?
I'll just put it straight out. I wouldn't be in acting. I wouldn't be in film. I wouldn't be getting all these, like, cherry gigs if I didn't wrestle, basically. So, like, I know what brought me to the dance. I'm, you know, Tommy Hellfire, the, you know, the wrestler. So Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. The only problem is, like, when I wrestle, I'm very expressive with my face, a little bit too expressive, like sort of campy, and it kind of works, you know, like always doing something with my eyes.
But guys your size don't necessarily do that all the time, so it makes you stand out, I think.
Oh yeah, and wrestling works great for film work. It's fucking horrible because it's hard to watch you, and nobody ever told me this. And I'd go to auditions thinking I'm hot shit, and I'd be doing my Tommy Hellfire crazy eye stuff, and I'd be like, yeah, thanks anyway, yeah, no worries, cool, see you later. so the thing is, I've missed more roles than I've gotten, but it's a learning experience, you know.
That's how wrestling works too.
Yeah, you can't tell me I can't do it. I will find a way to do it. I will keep coming. I'll keep coming back, you know, and it's always a learning process. So I've invested so much time in, like, drama coaching and all that sort of stuff just to work on the technique.
Yeah.
So now, you know, like, now whenever I go in somewhere, I at least have a technique down pat.
It's an art, like,
yeah,
wrestling. So, and it's also a skill that you have to refine.
Oh yeah, and you know, and I get to work with so many great actors and actresses. Sometimes you get good actors and actresses who you can improv with, and other times you get people who you can't, because they have to do line for line, because otherwise they get confused.
Like wrestling.
no comment. And other times you got to. And other times you got to work with people who didn't even fucking read the script, you know? So,
like wrestling tonight. Well, here's the thing too, man, is that I think you're interesting for that reason, is that you got this skill set in a corny pro wrestling business, which you took a different approach than most, in that you got on the owner side as well as the talent side, and then you're able to take these lessons and parlay it into a different industry that's somewhat related. Independent of, do you have a Star Now profile?
No, that's crazy, I don't. Everybody keeps telling me, my partner, she keeps, like, you know, like, getting into me about it, like, why don't you? And it's just kind of...
I have one, yeah, why don't you?
I don't know, my brother, he gets, my brother Corey, he gets so many modeling gigs and paid... Yep. Modeling gigs and that, you know. Oh, I'm much better looking than him, fuck that guy.
Dude.
Yeah.
So. Invest, it's like, I spent $35 and... Within a couple of weeks, I got booked on some fucking TV show at RMIT.
Beautiful.
Where it was actually phenomenal, because the guy, it's like a, apparently it airs on Foxtel, some bullshit channel that goes everywhere, but maybe a lot of people don't watch. So, my specialty. So, and yeah, and all I knew was that I was getting X amount of dollars, which was pretty good for 2 hours of work. I go... And it's a fucking show about people who've gone through horrible things in their life. So, like, I'm sitting in the green room with a guy who was on meth for 10 years and kicked the habit, and now he's sober, and it's a fight every day. Or another guy who was an alcoholic and was in prison for, like, 8 years. And I'm thinking, why the fuck am I here? What is it?
You're there to put
them over? I don't know. And then it occurred to me why, is because they had some jerk off college student intern as the person who was booking guests for this show. And this guy was a mark for pro wrestling. And my wrestling stuff is listed on my Star Now profile because it's relevant to my experience. Without it, I don't really have any experience in acting other than some shitty DVDs you can buy at Walmart.
Yep.
So it ended up being phenomenal because I went out there and we worked the situation and we talked about all the people I saw that had addiction problems, because it's prevalent in our business. Absolutely. So, you know, it ended up being a nice, easy payday. Good time. They never aired my episode because I didn't fit the bill of the gimmick, which is fine. I don't want to do meth for 8 years to get on the show. You know what I mean?
You get lean, man. You'll get really lean.
That's true. Speaking of really lean, you're really lean these days. Is it part of the acting gig, or what's the motivation there?
Oh, mate. Oh, fuck yeah. I keep getting, every time I show up to anything, I keep getting compared to Joe Mangiello. You know, the guy's buddy married to Sophia. Yeah, I keep getting that gimmick all the time. And every movie I keep getting into, there's always a scene written with me without my shirt on. And I don't want to be that fat dude without my shirt on. In wrestling, you can kind of get away with it a little bit.
Yeah, I've been doing a good job of that the last year or two.
pun?
I said I've been doing a good job of getting away with that for the last year or two.
Yeah, in movies.
Yeah, I'm married. I don't give a fuck.
In movies and film, you don't want to half do something. So I'm back on dieting, giving up. As I was saying to you before, I had a seven cup a day coffee addiction. Black coffee, and I was, because of that, holding a lot of water, so got rid of that. I'm only drinking green tea and soda water, soda water is just the bomb. So yeah, so back on the diet, back doing all that, and I found, like, getting in the wrestling ring now, like, you lose a few kegs,
everything moves better.
Oh, you move better, you think better, you think clearer when you're out there. You don't gas out, you don't run backstage and, like, you know, try to catch your breath, you just kind of stroll back, whatever.
Yep.
It's great. It's because of that. You know, I've been having some really good matches.
So, is it a situation where, I mean, obviously, you're a physically imposing guy. You're very tall. Do you find that in some of these acting endeavors that you get typecasted into those tough guy or guy who's not wearing a shirt or sleeveless guy number two who has to be big and intimidating type roles?
No. Actually, if I get booked for, like, being a wrestler, then yes. But I get typecast as the Ford Fairlane, John Travolta,
yeah,
by Andrew Dice Clay.
I can see that.
Every single time, man. They always go, like, you're a cross between Danny from Greece,
uh-huh,
and fucking Ford Fairlane.
Oh!
Oh! I fucked up. And that's where the sup line came from, basically. Nice. They gave me a massive quiff, the leather jacket. Ever since then, it's just kind of, that's just sort of been my thing. Even when I was, like, playing a cop on another feature that's coming out in February next year, called She-Borg, cheap plug. Yeah, like, at the end, I had to be, like, action star, but through the first half of the movie, I had to be, like, you know, your typical arrogant, sleazy sort of cop with a sort of, you know, oh.
I'll have you know, it's not a cheap plug, because Wrestle Merch Printing does sponsor this podcast.
Oh.
So it's on their dime.
Would Wrestle Merch, like, be keen on doing, like, movie merch? So if I was, like, approach them about, like, you know, like, movie stuff, like Murderdrome, which is at JB Hi-Fi, She-Borg Massacre, which is at JB Hi-Fi in February, or Evil Fred, that's about to come out.
I'm pretty sure if you hit them up on that Facebook page, they'll get right to it. They really are good. I just don't have any use for them in my life because I don't sell merch. But they do sponsor this podcast. If you do have merch needs, give them a call. Shoot them a message. They're super responsive.
I'm actually pretty sure that we already use them for Melbourne City Wrestling.
Oh, so you worked me.
I was going the gimmick, man. I was going the gimmick. But we're out. The match is over, man.
Yeah, fair enough.
The gig is up now.
How far out in advance do these acting gigs come? Because these projects, I imagine, aren't like one and done. You got to put time into it. You got to, like, they've got a post production. You're done filming and you won't see a rough cut for 3 months.
Yep.
How far in advance in that world do you secure bookings, or is it come as they take them kind of thing? Are you auditioning for new shit now on your free time? Like,
no, I don't. Jesus, man, I don't have any free time. I'll be like, I had to schedule this into the shooting a movie process. So they had to, like, shoot all these scenes without me. So now tomorrow night, Sunday night, I'm going to be filming till, like, bloody 3 a.m. in the morning, just to make up for doing this tonight. And then, you know, like, and obviously, like, my spare time, as I said, you know, I've got my daughter, I've got my partner. So those are other things that you want to do. So no, I'm not auditioning anything until I finish this project right now.
On a completely unrelated side note, every time I hear the word partner, I'm conditioned in the United States to think of my gay lover, because gay men would say my partner.
Well, we're equal, so, you know, like...
Fair enough.
Yeah, so...
Fair enough.
She, and, like, Ainsley is a boy's and a girl's name, I think, so...
Perfect.
Yeah, so rock the gimmick, hey?
Yeah, so when you said partner the first time a while back, I imagined for some reason, like, you laying in bed with, like, an Edwin-type character.
Edwin
the referee-type character.
Oh, yeah, no, I love a Twinkie Asian.
Yeah, absolutely. So anyway, it makes me laugh every time I hear that. My wife called me her partner, and I got offended at, like, a social gathering.
We are not equals, just so you know.
No, it's not so much that. It's much like, I've never heard anybody call each other their partner except gay men. Oh, well, so I didn't know it was like the norm here.
My uncle and his partner, Rodney, Uncle Ian and Uncle Rodney, they've always partners or whatever. Or when people, when I speak about Mikey or Victor, I always say my partner in crime or my business partner.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, it does.
Life partner too, taking it out of the preconceived concept that I have coming from where I came from, is a good word. Because you are partners in life. That makes sense.
That's it.
You can take the American out of the United States, but you can't take America out of me, baby. I'm just a terrible person.
You guys have equal marriage rights, though, don't you?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's been legal for a couple years now. Obama did that in his first term.
We don't.
It'll come, though. It's a progressive society over here, man.
It'll have to. I mean, like, even they wanted to do a plebiscite. To say, but the problem is, like, when you put the vote to, you know, that's how you got Brexit, that's how you got Donald Trump. You don't put it to a vote, mate, because you'll be surprised, because everybody's spoken the social conscience on, say, Facebook, don't speak for the full population. So if you put it out there, you're going to get a lot of hate back, when really, why should I have any right to vote for whether they should share their life together?
Yeah.
And whether that should be, like, why should you or me have any right on that? Like, it's kind of discriminatory.
It's 100% discriminatory. It's 100%. But again, I hope people don't get offended who may listen to this, but some of these societal norms are based on 2,000-year-old mythology. So,
don't even start me on religion.
Do you want to?
Let's do it. Where do we start, man? It's the biggest.
You're talking to a guy who played a Muslim, so.
That's a work, too.
Absolutely.
It's the biggest work in the bloody thing. Like, oh, my God. No. I don't do religion. I don't suffer that kind of stupidity.
But I think, like, even though you may be not a practitioner, it still affects your life in that those are the norms that society draws upon for law. Like gay marriage, for instance. Like, there's no justification other than Jesus says it's wrong, which he never does in the Bible. No. But nonetheless, either way, it's those, at least in the United States, it's those Bible belt, Bible thumpers that create the rules that the society has to live by.
Yeah, it's just a... Oh, my God. Yeah, it's just a way for people to push their prejudice. Don't do this because God will smite you. Don't do that because God will smite you. Like, we're against men lying with men because God will smite you. We're against women lying with women because, you know, God will smite you. Why would God care?
He gave you free will.
He gave you free will. Like, why would, you know, like, if we weren't supposed to enjoy sex, why would he have given us an orgasm?
Yeah, I agree. It's a fundamental outlook, and the fact that you're a creative person in that realm, I think, is why we have a similar view on this, because of that background and our outlook on life in general. 2,000 years ago, it was a great way, I think, to control society, to control people, and to have power. But the age of Google, through fear. But in the age of Google, it's, which I think is why you see worldwide religion dropping to an extent. It's ludicrous, some of the stuff. So I don't know.
I like the idea of, you know, guide to better living. You know, like, you know, treat your man, fellow man, with respect and love and all that sort of stuff. But the others, you don't need a Bible to tell you to do that, and you don't...
But if it does, and it makes you a better human being, more power to it.
Oh, absolutely.
But it shouldn't be a justification for cutting people's heads off in Syria. Or, you know, whatever the fuck.
Doesn't matter what the religion is, man. It's a total work.
Yeah.
Just for people to push their own bloody prerogative.
So is it... Okay, like... I've noticed that Australia is not nearly as openly or publicly religious, other than that shitty TV show that comes on before OCW reruns on a loop on Channel 31. And in one time, like, some two marks from some church knocked on my door and got into a 45-minute conversation with me where I used the space and planets and galaxies and asked them about that. Anyway, that's a tangent. Yeah. I like those conversations with those people.
You know,
but
if you give them hash cookies, they have to wait.
Perfect.
Just don't tell them they're hash cookies.
I definitely won't. But, like, it's not something that's, like, pushed a lot in society here, it seems.
No, well, I don't know. It wasn't as ingrained in our society as what, like, we were more, like, for example, like, you know, we still, you know, we're under British rule.
Yeah.
Whereas you guys, I don't know what year you guys declared your independence or whatever. So,
1776, you know, or some shit.
There you go. So we were only discovered in, like, 1787,
yeah,
or something like that. You know, so, like, you guys are very much, like, once you got rid of the British rule, God, all that sort of gimmicks and whatever. Like, we're, you know, like, it's not as ingrained in our society. We're not as, we haven't been around as much. So, like, you know, you go to Italy, they've got the church, you know, obviously ingrained in their society through, you know, thousands of years. We haven't been around that long, so.
Yeah. Well, in the United States, hasn't been around that long either, but, like, for instance, when I was a kid in the 80s growing up, I distinctly remember, and I don't know if kids still do it, but they did it going back to 1940s, is that at 8:15 when class starts, every kid stands up, puts their hand over their heart, I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Wow.
So, it's God is acknowledged in public school,
yep,
at the start of every day, which then when you start to think about it sounds an awful lot like
the cult,
fucking ISIS, yeah, or the cult or something. It's just different degrees of well, you know,
nothing, yeah, there's nothing wrong with the national pride. Like, we used to every school assembly we'd all stand up and sing the national anthem. I'd be, sure, fucked, yeah, I'd be fucked if I could tell you what it is now. But, like,
but everybody in that class lives in Australia or is Australian.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's tribal. It makes sense.
Yeah, so there's no mention of God or anything like that. But, like, we used to... it wasn't changed until recently, actually. Like, 30-odd years ago, it used to be God Save the Queen.
Yeah, and they don't say that now, huh?
Yeah, no, now it's Advance Australia Fair. Which, wow, you know...
I think in that way, the society is more progressive. Like, I don't have a problem with it, but it's presumptuous that people believe in God and that the society was built on God and God bless America and all that bullshit.
Yeah. Just a way for people to take control and rule through fear. Don't do this because God thing. And I'm an authority on God, so don't mess with me, buddy. Basically.
So to flip that then on its head, even though the United States to an extent is very still governed by religious norms, gay marriage became legal there. Australia is more progressive in terms of not necessarily bound to the traditions of religion, but gay marriage is still not something that's openly acknowledged or even legal here, right?
Oh, it's disgraceful. And it's even still, like, you know, with renewable energy and all that, like, they had all those windmills in Adelaide and they got rid of them, you know?
Yeah.
It's like the fact that, you know, like, we've got the Murray River, the hydro plant and all that sort of stuff. It's all these things that's just backwards because there's so much money in coal and there's so much money in mining and that. And as a society, we're not going to move forward. We're not going to break out. We're just going to keep bloody bleeding the earth of all of its blood until there's nothing left.
Yeah.
When the earth gives us everything that we need.
I will say this, though. You guys do a great job in healthcare.
Oh, fuck yeah. We got that down pat. And we'll also take all your religious holidays, too. So, you know.
Yeah, I'll definitely take advantage of those. Well, I for the longest time, most of my wrestling career, I didn't have health insurance.
Yeah.
Because you can't. Yeah, you can't. Who the fuck is going to put a professional wrestler under health insurance?
But didn't they have, like even if, like, you have a heart failure or heart condition, if you don't have, like, insurance, they'll fucking kick you out.
Yeah, it's hardcore like that, dude.
Oh, wow.
Well,
Jesus, that's brutal.
So, for instance, I think, yeah, I'm fairly certain.
I'll happily live with that game.
Very, very good. I may be mistaken here, but if it's life-threatening, they're under obligation to treat you, but you're fucked for the rest of your life financially because you'll never be able to pay it back.
Yep.
But they have to save your life. But, like, little things that happened to me, for instance, is once in 2006, I got my eye busted open and I needed stitches.
Yep.
I didn't have health insurance. It was 9 o'clock at night. I went to a doctor's place. They turned me down, a 24-hour doctor's place.
Yep, yep.
They wouldn't even let me in because I didn't have cash and I didn't have insurance. So fuck off. I even asked a vet to sign me. They said they'd lose their license, so they couldn't do it. I went to the emergency room, hospital, was there for 45 minutes. Some asshole gave me butterfly stitches, fucked right off. They sent me a bill for $3,000.
Oh, my God.
2 months later.
Jesus.
I told him to fuck off, wasn't going to pay it. What do I care? I'm a fucking wrestler. We all have bad credit anyway.
Yep.
and it's all medical shit. And they settled with me for like 7% of the original bill. Because that's how the insurance system works over there. If they can fuck you, they're going to. But if you... The problem is like you can't look at a menu at this hospital versus that hospital for what they charge for this procedure. You are literally rolling the dice and they'll charge you whatever they charge you. Whereas here, you don't have to worry about it.
But the... Well, here, the only thing that they're going to sting you on is if you don't have ambulance cover.
Yeah.
You will get stung for that.
So like, when you say stung, like, what are we talking here?
Oh, like, at least a couple of grand.
Wow, really?
Just to come and pick you up and take you to the hospital. So that's not a public service. You need insurance. Insurance for that is, like, really cheap. You know, it's like $50 a year or something. I don't know. But, like, yeah. I don't know. Like, I've had it, but I never actually bought it. Other people have bought it for me. But yeah, if they pick you up and you don't have insurance, fucking forget about it.
I have the gimmick expensive insurance now that I live here, and I mean, the way I look at it is like, fuck, I'm 37 years old, so I could very easily tear my ACL or something weird like that randomly.
Yep.
So I wanted the catastrophic coverage so that I'd have to pay just the out-of-pocket grand or whatever it is and just not worry about it and get priority.
It's still like 20, 30 bucks a week, though, isn't it?
For what, health insurance?
Yeah.
I'm not sure. I think between my wife and myself, we pay about $300.
The wife looks after it.
Yeah, the wife looks after it. Marry a doctor, bro. It's a perfect strategy. Oh. So, exactly. Total gimmick. So, it's the greatest thing I ever did for my career. So, look, I at this stage of my life, I find it unconscionable that I would ever get in the ring without insurance. The society, I think, is got its more of its shit together in that. Dude, I've been to the doctor more in the last 2 years. There's nothing physically wrong with me, but I've been to the doctor more in the last 2 years than I was in the last 15 years, because now I can get tests done to make sure I'm healthy in advance because it's free.
Well, they get the kickbacks for sending you to the... I don't know how it works, but I know the doctors get some sort of kickback by getting ordering the blood tests or whatever.
But at the same time, too, if they find out, oh, hey, you have pre-fucking diabetes, they're going to save money as a government when I don't get full-blown diabetes and they don't have to pay for it. Whereas in the U.S., everything's so expensive because it's reactionary. Instead of preventative medicine, it's react to what you're fucked up with already.
What's Obamacare, then? What's that gimmick?
Obamacare's gimmick was that, like... Okay, there was a shitload of people that didn't have insurance who weren't pro wrestlers. Their job just...
saving.
Yeah. Insurance worked through... You would get insurance through your health... through your employer.
Yep.
Your employer would pay...
Like superannuation.
Like superannuation works in this country.
Yep.
Employers there have to do that with health insurance.
Yep.
Where they pay a portion, you pay a portion, pre-tax, you get health insurance.
Yep.
So if you don't have the type of job that has that... Like, you're a stupid-ass pro wrestler on the indie circuit, you're fucked. Because you have to pay out-of-pocket $500, $600, and then they find out you're a wrestler, it's going to be 10 times that much. So, you're just fucked. You do without. But it's based on, again, like, I suppose, a pool of risk. So, however many people determine your premium, if you have kids it's more expensive, so on and so forth. Obamacare, the big thing too was that if you, let's say you signed up for insurance today and 2 years from now you got cancer, God forbid, if you believe in that kind of thing, but it seemed like a nice thing to say after
knock on wood,
the insurance company could turn around and say, we're not going to pay for your treatment because this was a pre-existing condition you had before we insured you. So they're in the business of taking your premium and not paying out your benefits.
It's like that fucking Matt Damon movie.
100%.
Yeah.
That's real life.
Yeah.
So the most important thing that Obamacare did was it eliminated any insurance company's ability to say, no, we won't treat you for a pre-existing condition.
Yep.
Number one. Number two, the only way that that could financially work, the idea was, is that everybody has to have health insurance. Just like everybody has to have car insurance. The legal argument difference is driving is a privilege. You don't have to drive, which means you don't have to buy car insurance. But as a mandate, everybody has to buy health insurance. So that's why it's unpopular.
Yep.
certain people's insurance premiums went up because, quite frankly, they make more money. And poor people need to be subsidized somehow. So the end result is that 30 million people, including me, while I was still living in the United States, got insurance when we wouldn't have it. And from here on out, an insurance company can never fuck a person over by saying your disease was a pre-existing condition. So it's a step in the right direction, but it was written with the insurance company's interests in need as well. It's like a compromise.
Yeah.
Whereas here, it's just a single payer. There is insurance companies aren't involved unless you don't want to wait in line, basically.
Yeah, basically. I've had it before. I had a year out of wrestling, actually, because of a shoulder injury.
Yeah.
And I eventually ended up on private health insurance. I had my shoulder operated on and that. And that took for fucking ever, mate. I was out for like a year.
It took a year before you had your surgery? Or it took a couple months, then you had to recover, and the whole time was a year?
Like 6-7 months before I got my surgery. And then, like, you know, another 4-5 months recovering.
How long ago was that?
2011, I think. 2010 to 2011 or 12.
Wrestling related, obviously.
Yeah, wrestling related. I was doing a spot on a show. I had a trash can on the guy's head, and I was going to hit him with a chair, and I like turned around to the crowd and I yelled at the crowd, and then I turned around to hit this guy with a chair, and fucking boom, my shoulder popped out, and it was all nasty. Oof, yeah, it was all nasty. I couldn't move my hand for like a few minutes. I got him to, because I was a little bit like, oh shit, what do I do? So I got him to just fucking send me outside. And I only had one arm, and then I was gripping onto it, and he's clotheslined me over the top. So fucking stupid me. hit the deck hard, gripping my arm. Eventually got some feeling back in it. Got in there, finished the match. And then, yeah, the next day I couldn't move my arm for like a week.
Yeah.
Oh, it was a... Oh, jeez.
So what was the diagnosis? Did you separate your shoulder? Did you tear your rotator cuff? What was it?
No, I think it was just like some torn tendons and shit like that. So that's like reattached, scrape and do all that sort of shit.
Right or left?
Left. So I could still, like, you know, do all the things I needed to do.
Yeah. Gotcha.
I've had a reoccurring shoulder injury from my left collarbone sits a couple centimeters forward from where it should because some asshole who wanted to get his shit in dropped me on my fucking head in 2007, popped my collarbone out of place, didn't have health insurance. So instead of going to the hospital next door to the venue, I sucked it up. My collarbone healed wrong for life. It's on the wrong spot now. Let that be a lesson. Nonetheless, after that, I would separate my shoulder all the time.
Did you do anything for it? Or?
No. I rehabbed it, but it just was in the wrong spot. So I was anatomically not symmetrical anymore.
Yeah.
So it fucked with me. Like, to this day, I can't do wide grip pull-ups at all.
Really?
I have, yes, because my collarbone feels like it's going to break when I get to this spot.
Ooh.
My overhead press is limited because, again, my collarbone feels like it'll break.
Just like, is that a certain grips or just all overhead?
Yes. If it's a close grip overhead, I'm fucked when I get to a certain angle because, again, the collarbone doesn't sit in the right spot.
But if I do,
they can't see this on the podcast, my gestures. If I do like a hammer grip pull up, I can do those all day.
Yep.
No problem, because there's no stress on my collarbone.
Yeah.
Lower lats take over. So anyway,
in biceps,
forearms and shit like that. But so like because of that, I would take a back bump, shoulder come out. I would take I couldn't take front bumps anymore. Shoulder would come out.
Yeah, I was having that with my shoulder. That's when I decided to take time and step away and heal it up.
Yeah. Well, it was never an option for me to get surgery. I thought about maybe I should go get surgery. They told me, I went to a sports medicine clinic at the university in Louisville. They told me, you're fucked. We have to break your collarbone. Then we have to set it back in place. Then you're good. You're looking at 15 months. And it'll never be the same, and it'll always be prone to breaking again.
Just leave it.
So I left it. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So then I decided I was going to just put on more muscle mass, and I really concentrated on eating right, blah, 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 blah. Changed my body, put on a lot of muscle mass. Never happens again on rare exceptions, and it pops out and pops right back in. So it's not nearly as bad as it used to be. Anyway, the last time I came to Australia before I moved here, Zorn set me in... Nick Dinsmore up with this osteopath in Bendigo. Paleo Osteo. So I'll throw him a plug.
Yep.
This fucking guy hugged my left arm around his waist somehow and popped. And for the first time in like 6 years, my collarbone fell back into place. The most amazing feeling washed over me to where like, oh, your fucking body is whole again. And it was amazing.
Miracle
and
man.
Yes, and to this day, like, still it sticks out a little bit, but it's not nearly in such an awkward position. So I can still do like my pull-up ability dramatically improved, overhead press, incline bench, but still, I need to go back and see him.
Yeah,
paleo osteo.
Give it to Zoran for that one.
Zoran with the assist on that.
Oh, yeah. Zoran with the hot tag.
For sure. Crazy, dude. So, do you find, like, have you had to get, like, physical in any of these acting gigs that you've done so far? Like, gimmick fake fights and shit like that?
Yeah. All the time. Tommy, yeah. Because part of the appeal is that I'm a wrestler and I'm, you know, 6'5". So, they just... you know, 110 odd kilos. So, you know, they always want me fighting in some way, shape, or form.
The people that you're involved in these scenes with, do they appreciate the fact that you can make shit look good, but you don't touch them or hurt them?
Yeah.
I would imagine that's a commodity in the acting world.
Oh shit, yeah. Like, you know how to pull your punches. But a lot of it with movies is like, because I was doing filming a fight scene for that Iron Spider film, and I'm throwing the wrestling punches in, and the cameraman was telling me, like, that's not how you do it, you gotta do it this way, so like, and I'm like, you know, kind of, who the hell is this guy? And somebody's pulled me over, side smartened me up, and he's gone, he filmed the Thin Red Line and Mission Impossible 3, so if he's telling you how to fucking do something, you might want to listen to him. So I was like, oh, okay, sweet. Back in my box. Yeah, so it's like, you don't actually come anywhere near them. And like, I had a bunch of wrestlers come down, like, you know, Chris Trance, Slade Mercer, Sid Parker, Chris Menzies come down to do some like fight scenes for Sheborg, and I actually wore more punches off them than I did anybody else. So, you know, like, the actors actually, you know, they don't come anywhere near each other. We're wrestlers. We want to make everything snug and look good.
Well, live theater versus 18 camera angles, and they can fix it in post.
Fuck yeah. That's another thing you got to get used to doing. Like, in wrestling, your work is big and as large as you possibly can, whereas with movies and that, you got to be... subtlety is so much more... you got to be so subtle and so... you got to dial it down a whole lot, because you're not playing to the people, you know, like right at the back. You know, you're playing it to the camera. You know,
which is zoomed in on your face.
Exactly. So yeah. Like, I do a lot of like moving around. Look, wrestlers do whenever they cut promos, the head is never in the one spot. You know, like you're moving around, you're darting around. You know, like, you're doing shit with your eyes. You're making your point. Ooh, yeah. You know what I mean? You're doing the whole gimmick. Whereas like movies, you kind of got to like. You gotta play it like real life. So if I'm talking to you right now, I'm not like glaring at you. My eyes aren't popping out of my head. I'm not fucking moving my head around a million miles an hour or anything like that. You know, I'm talking to you straight. So that's one thing that they had to kick out of me, something fierce. Stop fucking wrestling promos. Start, you know, just talking normal.
Fair enough. But at the end of the day, if they decided that, you know, hey, we need this fight scene to get a little snug because it's a one camera shot, you'd be more than up for the task.
Oh shit, yeah. They want me in this next movie to throw some dude through a table, and I'm like, because you can do that. And I said, yeah, it's fine. And they're like, oh, do we need training to do that? And I was like,
tuck your chin.
Yeah, tuck your chin, mate. tuck your chin and flat back it. You'll be fine. I've done this a million times. You'll be right.
Have you turned any acting roles down? Like, hey, we were really trying to push for this gay marriage in Australia thing. We need you to play a male prostitute with 5 lovemaking scenes that are graphic. It's for a private investor. Are you interested? $500.
For $500?
I'm just saying. Like, no, that's a stupid example. But, like, has there been anything that you've been offered that you turned down for any reason?
Yeah, I've been turned down stuff. Not in a bad way or anything like that. I got, like, some guy messaged me about, like, you know, like, being an extra in his movie. And I'm like, yeah, I'm not above that. You know, like, yeah, sweet, whatever. Then the guy wanted me to fucking audition to be an extra. And I'm like, nah.
Was it a paid gig or was it expenses paid type thing? Oh, well, fuck that.
It wasn't a paid gig. It wasn't fucking anything. It was just like, we want martial artists. All right, number one, I'm not a martial artist. All right. But you have to come down. You got to audition. All right, well, fuck, man. Like, I've been wrestling for 10 years. I'm not a fucking martial artist. You know, you contacted me. I'm not fucking auditioning to be a fucking extra.
Fair enough.
Do you have an agent?
No. No, that's the next step. So basically, like, you can't just, like, walk in and say, like, I think I'm hot shit, book me.
Yeah.
It's not like wrestling or anything like
and
that.
And there are 100 idiots who probably do that a day that are clueless.
Oh, and
like wrestling.
And I see so many people like that, you know, they'll do, like, you know, one short film and then all of a sudden they'll think they're in the industry.
Yeah.
Or they'll do, you know, like one shitty match or whatever, and all of a sudden they'll think that, you know, you're their peer.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it takes hard work and it takes a lot of, you know, things. So I don't go into any acting gig, you know, strutting around like I'm more experienced or more anything than anybody else. You know, like every, you know, it's just, I digress because I kind of forget where I was going with that. So.
Well, the idea, the premise was, like, has there been anything offered to you that you either didn't want to do for whatever reason,
I had one, right? I read the line. I got sent the synopsis. We want to do wrestling. We need a few wrestlers. You know, some just to double up for the main cast because it'll be funny.
In an apartment, wearing no clothes. No,
oh,
I'm kidding.
No, it gets juicy. It gets real juicy, really spicy. So it was, I read the movie title, Fangs in the Fast Lane. I was like, that's a fucking sweet sounding movie. And you want wrestling? Yeah. Yeah, sweet. And then anyway, we're talking back and forth. They're going, something's not right here with what they're saying. So I read the synopsis and there was something about a guy with his gay lover who was also a private detective fighting gay Aztec lords. And I'm like,
gay Aztec lords?
Yeah. And I was like, wow, this is really gay. This is really super gay. And I'm reading through it and I'm like, wow, this is spicy. And then I read, and then I clicked back on the email and read the thing. It wasn't called Fangs in the Fast Lane. It was called Fags in the Fast Lane.
Are you serious?
And we committed.
Wow.
So I was just like, fuck it, we're doing it. I was like, fuck it, why not? We're doing it. So I had to be a body double for the lead actress. So they pulled me in full drag. Like, and it was, like, and clearly I'm not a woman.
Yes.
I like to think that, you know, you see me, you'd recognize that I'm not a woman.
I would classify you as masculine.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. You too.
Well, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. So they made me shave the beard off and they gave me the full, like, full outfit that she was wearing, fishnets and everything. It was
phenomenal.
Oh, it was fucking, it was crazy. And then they had, but shit, you know, like, Christ, just be up for it. Just do it.
So when the credits roll on that particular project, does it say Drag Queen number 2, Tommy Hellfire?
No, I'm an Easter egg on that one. And I had Sid Parker show up, and he had to play the evil lizard. So they put him in this massive lizard suit with all these, like, what looked like dicks all over this fucking suit. So, like,
perfect.
So I'm wrestling in a wig with fake tits, and he's wrestling in this fucking lizard dick suit. And it was crazy. And I'm sitting there, like, you know, in between takes, and I'm just hanging by the ring, just, you know, getting photos with people because they all wanted a photo of me. And I'm like, yeah,
of course they did.
Yeah, I was like, yeah, fuck, yeah, why not? And then and I had Dave Norris come up to me in front of everybody, going, "Oh, Tommy, you know what you look like? You look like one of those homosexuals. I think I might turn for you." I sit there with all these actual gay people going, "What do you mean turn?"
Wow, phenomenal. I like the fact that David Norris was there. Why was he even there? Was it his ring?
Mustache rides.
Fair enough. You heard it here first. Season 3, episode 3. Tommy, any final words? My battery's going to die. Anything you want to plug? The floor is yours, sir.
Keep an eye out for She-Bog. We'll be coming out in February, I believe, through Monster Film. So that should be out in JB Hi-Fi. Check out the Iron Spider film online that won an award. And be good to each other. That's about it. I don't really give a shit. Do whatever you want to each other, but check out my shit.
Yeah.
And you can order MCW shows online, right? Oh. Vimeo?
Yep.
I got people in the United States to listen to this, so plug your shit. Yeah, no, plug your shit.
Yeah, MCW online on Vimeo. You can purchase the shows, or you can hire the shows, or whatever.
Does Lucha Fantastica have that same thing going, where you can purchase or stream the shows after the fact?
No, we don't. No, that's a different sort of kettle of fish, that show.
You should call Wrestle Merch Printing. They can help you out with that.
Wrestle Merch Printing. Tommy Chocolate, right?
Yes, and they can't help you with shit.
He actually used to... We did a few gimmicks years ago, like 7, 8 years ago, where he was my manager.
Really?
Yeah, no shit.
You guys go back.
We go way back. History. Me and Tommy Chocolate, mate. We're tight, believe it or not.
I don't think we can get any higher than that.
Yep.
Thank you for listening. Season 3, Episode 3, Tommy Hellfire. It was a blast. Thank you, my man.
Oh, cheers, brother. Thanks for having me. Love your work.
What's going on, guys? Head Movement here. Sean Starker here from the Healthy Movement Podcast. You know, we're in a lot of different areas on the internet. You can find us all over the place. We're readily available, but one of my favorite places to listen to the Healthy Movement Podcast is on the FNX Network. Because when I'm over there, they have a whole bunch of other stuff that I'm interested in. They got a wide range of offerings, from sports to lifestyle, entertainment. If you're into gaming, techs, or politics, you're looking for a good politics podcast, then certainly the FNX Network can accommodate you. Man, they've got a wide range, a little something for everybody. And with their new website format at fnx.network, it's really easy to search and find what I'm looking for. Man, I'm able to go through all the really awesome shows and even written articles by up-and-coming authors like Luke Wiskowski. Man, really, really great stuff, man. I've read so much of my sports news. It's pretty much where I get my MMA news, and thankfully so, because they're right on point. Great reporting. FNX.network really goes out of their way to make sure that their content is updated daily, that it's relevant, that it's good and engaging. It's really, the guys do a hell of a job over there. Like I say, the new website is very easy to navigate. You guys want to head over, check them out at FNX.network. I guarantee that you're going to find something that you like over there. Of course, the Healthy Movement Podcast is over, but make sure you check out guys like Shoot the Defense and have a great time. And the FNX Network, a little something for everybody over there, redefining how we get entertainment on the internet. Check them out, FNX.network. Tell them we sent you.